Rain of Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
Let's open up that rave line. Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC is going to do the same thing again, year after year. Oh, no.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rain of Troy Radio, episode 381, coming to you on Thursday, September 17th. It looks like football is coming back. We're going to talk about the developments of a wild, wild Wednesday in the Pac-12 and so much more around USC football. As always, you can follow us on Twitter, Rain of Troy. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Rain of Troy. Be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast, Google Play, and Omni Studio. Our bonus episodes are over on Patreon, patreon.com/Rain of Troy. Our email address is rainoftroy@fansite.com, and our phone number is 213-373-1USC.
Suck it, what's Bruin Show.
I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joined along with my co-host, Alicia Deratul.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, Alicia. This is quite the occasion. Just last week, it looked like football was dead to rights. There are signs of life, signs of the Pac-12 coming together as early as like next week to practice football, perhaps on Halloween.
I mean, you said like as last week,
wow.
signs of life were not there. On Wednesday morning, there weren't that many signs of life. The trip that was Tuesday night to Wednesday night, which is when we're recording this, was wild. It was
to say the least
wild, bizarre, unexpected, and kind of welcome on my part.
Yeah, needless to say, the podcast is going to get a little more interesting going forward.
You mean we might have reason to record more often than every other week?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We might actually be able to do that. Yeah, even though we've got bonus content coming your way over on Patreon. We did our first Only Skinect dedicated episode, and we're also going to do more of that. We have another Only Skinect coming your way, along with a new Takes with Jake that we're recording later this week. So look for that over on Patreon with our pal Jake Merrifield of the What's Bruin Show. But Alicia, so much to get into, so much to talk about. So let's just take a quick break, come back and go to the news and get to it, shall we?
Let's do it.
Alicia, let's get straight into talking about the timeline that puts this all together with college football potentially coming back, well, at least Pac-12 football coming back together for the Trojans to participate in. September 3rd is really where it all starts. The Pac-12 gets a new testing partner, Quidel. This allows for daily testing with results as quickly as 15 minutes, all within an hour. Machines and tests expected to be delivered by the end of September. This is a system that I believe the University of Arizona has used. SMU is used. Some other schools have. But this is a big development by the Pac-12 coming on the eve of the college football season, you know, in terms of the other conferences that are playing. A big development for a conference in the Pac-12 that has said all the right things up until that point, putting, you know, science first, putting the health of their players first and all those kind of things. And here they are upping the testing, exactly what the first step to getting back on the field should be, is something to help fight the pandemic. And there it was, September 3rd.
Yeah, and this was all in the midst of the Big 12 having their back in the Big 10. I'll get that right one time. Having their back and forth about whether or not they were going to...
The Big 14.
The Big 14, yeah. Since, you know, it's really not 10 to begin with. But their back and forth about whether or not they were going to come back, watching all the other conferences, maybe come back, postpone games, but also come back and blah, blah, blah. And the Pac-12 seemed to be sort of flying under the radar there. And now that we're sort of here at this week, that development seems to be the thing that allowed everything that went down on Wednesday to go down.
Yeah, because last week you look at the Big Ten and you had coaches like Ryan Day, James Franklin putting out statements, talking to the media, saying things like, why aren't we playing? James Franklin being upset that he said that the conference wasn't explaining to players or to schools why they weren't playing, which...
It was all very asinine because they explained very thoroughly exactly why they weren't playing.
They knew why they weren't playing.
What they really wanted to know was, why aren't we taking the same risks that everyone else is taking?
Right. Why aren't the Big Ten university presidents as risky when it comes to football as the SEC presidents? But you can't really say that. The optics of that aren't necessarily quite as good as demanding that you want to play as a way of rallying around your players. And so the Big Ten gets in the situation where suddenly they're having to go through rumors of a revote. The rumors come out over the weekend. We see this Saturday. Could it happen Saturday? Could it happen Sunday? Could it happen Monday? Could it happen Tuesday? Keeps getting delayed all the way until Wednesday morning. But on Tuesday, the Pac-12 sort of starts some rumblings here in which... this comes from SC and from SC players, at least. Amon Ross St. Brown and Keaton Slovis lead the charge of an open letter from USC players to California Governor Gavin Newsom. In this, they say, quote, from the onset of this pandemic, the Pac-12 has rightfully and responsibly maintained that their decisions would be based on science. And now it appears that the science and technology have turned in favor of playing. A great message from USC players, I think, in that sense.
Kudos on that letter that USC's players released, because it was very reasoned. It was very mature. It was very respectful. But it sort of got down to their point of saying that they wanted to play. They wanted to do so safely. And they appreciate that their schools and that their conference and that their states had been taking a cautious approach. But I think that was the money line there in the whole thing, was hitting everything. You've done this right. You've done this responsibly. Now that the testing is in place, we've crossed that threshold. Let's go.
Yeah, which is the move to do. And that's the argument to play, at least. But at least part of it, because in that letter, it also goes on to say that, you know, other schools are playing. And, you know, I put this on Twitter. SC's argument, really the Pac-12's argument, should not be to the local governing bodies. It should not be, you know what, Clemson's playing, Notre Dame's playing, Alabama's playing. That's not the argument. The argument should be, like, what is preventing, you know, USC from playing? The local ordinances, right? So you need to make the argument, why can the Rams play and we can't? Why can the Dodgers play and we can't? Why can the Angels play and we can't? Why can the Chargers and the Niners play and Cal and Stanford can't play, right? Those are the arguments you need to be making. Even if we know that the pro and college games are on different, you know, levels and whatnot,
well,
in terms of
one being paid professionals and one not.
For sure. And we know that the bubble in the other leagues potentially a little bit tighter, but even that's subjective. I mean, we've talked about it before. The only true bubble are the ones that we've seen in the NHL and the NBA. So you could, the argument was to say, hey, look, it looks like there's some sort of grounds of hypocrisy when you look at our testing versus theirs. How can it not be on the level to get approved? That should have been the argument from the get-go on in this letter. And I felt like if it would have been that angle, maybe it would have been a little bit stronger. Even though that was Tuesday. Right after USC does this, Oregon players do the same thing. They appeal to their governor. We wake up Wednesday morning, and suddenly the Big Ten announces that they've voted and they are returning to play as expected, as people long expected. And it's interesting because we looked at the Big Ten and... You know, for the past month and a half, the last 6 weeks, the Big Ten has crap their pants over and over and over again with
that's,
this, right?
That's one way to put it, yes.
Like, everything has been awful.
I think it's been coming out from both ends for the Big Ten. They're having some serious
blowouts.
Digestive and regurgitative problems.
Yes,
some bad food poisoning over in the Big Ten.
Yeah. Either way, they needed to be in lockstep like the Pac-12. The Pac-12 was always in lockstep. The Pac-12, I think, was always had a good, rationale for things. I think the Pac-12 was just completely outclassing the Big Ten in terms of how these conferences were handling these things, because the Pac-12 didn't look like they were hesitating. The Pac-12 didn't look like they didn't know what they were doing. The Pac-12 didn't look like they weren't all on the same page. The Pac-12 had their crap together, and something that you haven't seen in a long time. Something no one would have guessed, right? This is the conference that isn't making as much money. This is the conference that has... And it had to lay off all those people from the Pac-12 network.
It's the conference that can't get a TV deal done.
No,
that insists on having its headquarters in the most expensive place to have an office space.
But they were handling the pandemic better than anyone else, especially the Big Ten, which we saw in direct competition. Because they were on the same timelines, right? And it was wild to see that. And so you look at this, and I'm saying, okay, if football is going to come back, it needs to be because of the science that allowed you to do that. It shouldn't be because Ryan Day and James Franklin got loud and rowdy about it and just wanted to re-vote because of FOMO, because they were upset about not playing. You need to have an actual reason behind it. And so the Big Ten announces that they return to play on Wednesday morning. And what do? Suddenly, out of nowhere, they start hyping up their new testing regimen.
Which they don't have a partner for yet, by the way. Or at least they aren't announcing who the partner is. They said they're going to announce later on who the...
And we know that Trump has said that he was going to get involved. We don't know the fruits of that labor. We don't know what happened there.
Yeah.
I mean, the White House is taking credit, but like that's a whole other conversation. Like, the Big Ten, at least talking about testing, which shows, again, the importance of putting testing first. But
well, in the narrative,
the Pac-12 has been talking about testing the whole time here.
The narrative out of the Big Ten, once they made the announcement, was this is only possible because of the new antigen, because of the antigen testing, the ability to test daily and to get rapid results.
Right.
And so at the very least, as much as the last month has been a crap storm for the Big Ten, at least when it came down to brass tacks, like they weren't doing it entirely for the wrong reason. At least they were saying specifically that this was only made possible because of the testing.
But Ryan Day wasn't campaigning about the antigen test.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. But at the same time, like I you have to give credit to the presidents who voted to cancel the season and then change their votes. Like, I don't think that the presidents who changed their votes would have done so lightly. Like, too many of them were so invested in the safety, the health and safety element of it, that there must have been a change of tone as far as their the advisors that they had on the medical side and all, and certainly in the testing side. So at least they're going into it with the rigorous testing program, with a plan to get things going and in motion in a safe a way as possible, even if I think it was absolutely... The timing of this is sparked by FOMO, because what they could have done is waited and gone in all in on the spring with the Pac-12, and they would have had even more time to get this all settled up. But instead, now they're rushing it specifically because of FOMO.
Right. 100%. And at least, like, I'm sticking to the idea that, you know, the Pac-12 at least was talking about science the whole time and talking about the testing the whole time.
Well, now that I agree that the Pac-12 was talking about science and the testing the whole time.
Until
you get to Wednesday, and things happen as quickly as they do on Wednesday because FOMO.
Right, for sure. And Wednesday happens, and after the Big Ten announces that they're going to return to play, Larry Scott puts out a statement at 7:45 in the morning, quote, "At this time, our universities in California and Oregon do not have approval from state or local public health officials to start contact practice." We are hopeful that our new daily testing capability can help satisfy public health approvals in California and Oregon to begin contact practice and competition. So that's Larry Scott at 7:45 in the morning. 5 hours later, 12:45, California Governor Gavin Newsom responds as part of a press conference. He says, quote, "I want to make this crystal clear. Nothing in the state guidelines denies the ability for the Pac-12 to resume. That has been a misrepresentation of the facts."
Yeah, and it really confused a lot of people because earlier that day, Larry Scott is sitting there saying that they can't practice because of the state of California. And on Tuesday night, USC's players were saying we can't practice because of the state of California. Like, there was a reason they assigned that letter to Gavin Newsom. So then Gavin Newsom turning around and dropping that bit was odd, to say the least.
Yeah, and it's an interesting situation because, you know, Gavin Newsom's got a million different things on his plate.
Well, the press conference...
The state is on fire.
Yeah.
There's a global pandemic, and here is college football's being thrown at him, which is bizarre in of itself. But it doesn't help that there's more confusion here, which looks bad for the Pac-12.
Well, it looked bad for the Pac-12. It looked bad for California. For the state, yeah. It just looked like everybody, like, was... totally not on the same page, which is not really what you want to see from the people who are in charge of anything, whether it's the government or, you know, a football conference.
Right. And lo and behold, less than 2 hours later, about 2:30, the Oregon governor chimes in and gives Oregon and Oregon State essentially a waiver to be able to participate in their activities. And they just say that they're just waiting on the Pac-12 to provide a procedure of what the new testing capabilities are and how that will affect things going forward, and then put the ball back in the Pac-12's court.
Yeah, and this was another sort of, like, it was good news for the Pac-12, but not a good look for the Pac-12 because Kate Brown, in her statement, said, "Up to this point, we have received no written operating procedures for approval from the Pac-12 for the upcoming season under the new guidance, and we have no details from the conference about their new rapid testing proposal." So they really sort of threw the Pac-12 under the bus there, saying that they weren't the ones holding up the approval for coming back, which I found to be very interesting. When you sort of consider that, a lot of people have used that as for fodder against the Pac-12, like what you're saying, that they didn't even go and ask anybody before all this. But the more I thought about it, and I sort of bought into that as well, but the more I thought about it, the more I realized, like, I think if you're going to accuse the Pac-12 of anything here, it's that maybe they weren't ambitious enough. But sure. If you're the Pac-12 and you're sitting there going, okay, we have this testing partnership, but the testing apparatus are not going to arrive on campus until the end of September, so they're not there yet. I would understand the Pac-12 sitting back and saying, okay, let's get this stuff ready to go on campus, and then we'll approach the government and say, see, look at what we've got going here. Now, I think you could look at the Pac-12 and say, hey, you should have pushed for this earlier. But at the same time, I'm not necessarily going to blame the Pac-12 for maybe biding their time until they had their stuff, their ducks in a row, when literally California, Oregon, and Washington are on fire.
Right.
You couldn't be practicing last week anyways, because the air quality last week was beyond bad. I couldn't go outside to walk to my car. And in Southern California, it was not as bad as it was in the Bay Area, and it was not as bad as it was in Oregon. So, you know, it's not like those schools could have been pushing to practice then anyways, let alone they didn't have the testing stuff. So while I think the Pac-12 maybe could have been on board with getting things ready for sort of having conversation with those governments, I kind of get why they didn't. Not trying to give them a pass, but I get it.
But also, as of last week, the timeline was all about the spring anyway.
Yeah, but until the Big Ten sort of, you know, Leroy Jenkins their way into the fall season.
Yeah, I guess we can press this for that.
Wow. Yeah.
But anyways, 21 minutes after the Oregon governor puts out a statement, and Oregon and Oregon State look like they're on their path to getting back on the football field. John Wilner posts an article using a California official as a source, stating that the Pac-12 can play games, but they must still adhere to the 12-person groups when practicing. Wilner paraphrases the source by saying, quote, teams can find workarounds to 11-on-11 practices. They can have walkthroughs. They can practice against air. They can use virtual reality and tackle dummies. They can use mental exercises. And this was not the not the best look for the states, not the best look for the conference. Everyone seemingly on Twitter was reacting to this article.
See, and this was the article where I think things perception for myself flipped from, man, the Pac-12 really screwed up here, to, wait, no, the state of California is just being dumb. Because the state of California is out there trying to say that they're not the ones that are getting in the way of the Pac-12 returning to play.
Right.
But they actually have this state-level ordinance which limits teams practicing to 12-man cohorts.
Right.
So you can't practice with more than 12 people in a cohort, and that cohort cannot mingle with other cohorts. So if you have 12 men in that group that is practicing, you can't have six of them be on offense and then them play against a defensive cohort. No, they have to all be in the same thing. And then the worst of it, the absolute mind-blowing, just brain-numbing worst of it, was when the official, the source that Wilner had, said that when he got pressed about how, like, well, how can you do, you can't do 11-on-11, he said, well, they can do 5-on-5. Which,
I mean, it could work for an offensive line, right?
Okay.
without an offensive line, that's 5-on-5. Or yeah.
So your cohort needs to be 6 offensive linemen and 6 defensive linemen, and that's the cohort that's working together so that they can...
Potentially, sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just...
Something like that. But the interesting thing is, this posted at 2:51 on Wednesday. 25 minutes later, 3:14, Wilner posts, quote, sources, after speaking to Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott, Newsom's office reached out to USC officials. Plan is to fast-track revision to controversial 12-person cohort max. That shifts focus to local health and easier hurdle for the schools. This is big. Which leads to a few questions here. Number one, did it take the article to reverse this?
Like the crap storm that was swirling around, like everyone here is being dumb. Yeah, it was a
23 minutes.
It was a very loud 23 minutes, Michael.
Yes.
It was.
Did it take that? Or is this a situation where, and I'm willing to entertain this thought, there's just so many moving parts. Everything is moving so fast today. That this might be one of those things where the state and the conference and a lot of people are kind of caught out on things changing rapidly, and the communication just not being there across everyone, especially when you look at it from the state's perspective. Like we mentioned, again, the state is on fire. There's a global pandemic. College football should not be like in the top 50 things of things that should be on Newsom's desk right now.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely what was going on here. You had many different people who are juggling 1,000 different things, all trying to get on the same page at the same time. And over the course of, you know, an hour or 2 hours or a few hours, you have different people saying drastically different things because things are changing so quickly and right. Not everyone's getting the memo. I would suspect that the source that Wilner talked to wasn't privy to the conversation between Newsom and Larry Scott that came to the conclusion that, yeah, no, we can deal with this 12-man cohort thing and get that, you know, sealed up for you. The source that Wilner has is sort of left on an island, because if they don't have that information, they're going to keep spouting off the same bullcrap that they were, you know, having to parrot before. So, yeah, it's just the way that timing works, but... It certainly played out in, you know, in a bit of a whirlwind of like stupidity and just news craziness.
Yeah, you're looking left, right, up, down the timeline. Everything's changing. At 4:00, Larry Scott puts out a statement welcoming return to contact practice and thanking Newsom and Brown for their support. Our California and Oregon universities will now individually and immediately reach out to their relevant county, public health officials to seek clarification was required to achieve the same clearance to resume contact and competition. We are eager for our student athletes to have the opportunity to play this season as soon as it can be done safely and in accordance with public health authority approvals. Needless to say, that's basically the flag of football's coming back.
Yeah, well, because the whole time we'd been sort of told that the local officials were going to do as the state bid. That was the case, not just when it came to college football or college athletics. That's been the narrative across the board, at least, from coming from within Los Angeles, that Los Angeles was going to go as Sacramento went. And so when the USC players are sending the letter to Gavin Newsom, they're doing so because everybody knows that the local LA county is not going to stop USC from playing if the state of California says go ahead. And so it really was that first hurdle that you had to clear and then move on from there to knock down your next boss or whatever.
Yeah, and that came an hour and 27 minutes later. Heather Dinich at 5:27 p.m. of ESPN tweets, a source with knowledge of the discussions told me that with the clearance at the local level in Felicia, she did it.
Okay, Michael, it's a tweet.
I character, know. It doesn't excuse the fact she used the four-letter word for this beautiful state.
Going back to Cali. Oh,
anyways, California, I'm going to add the California in there, and Oregon, it's possible the Pac-12 can return as soon as late October. Late October would put them in line with the Big Ten. The Big Ten's coming back October 24th. Late October could mean the 24th, could mean the 31st. Both of those are Saturdays. An hour and 13 minutes later, LA Mayor Eric Garcetti says he wouldn't oppose a Pac-12 return to play. And then 31 minutes later after that, USC and UCLA get a green light from the LA County, according to John Wilner. The Pac-12 president said, pre-planned a meeting scheduled for Friday, which is the earliest we can expect the conference to decide to move forward with practice / a season. So that's how things stand as of Wednesday night. We are recording this on Wednesday night to put up on Thursday. At this rate, who the hell knows what's going to happen on Thursday? You might have a full schedule at this point. Wilner's saying not until Friday, but who knows?
At the speed that things are moving at right now, Michael, Keaton Slovis could start a game and throw 5 touchdowns before the end of Thursday. That's just how quick this is all going.
I actually think this is a case of optimistic Alicia.
It actually really is, though.
It is.
And yeah, let me tell you why. On sort of Monday, Sunday-ish, I started thinking about, okay, for Rana Troy, how do I need to cover the Big Ten coming back? Because at the time, there was no word out of the Pac-12. So it was like, okay, so the Pac-12 is waiting for local approval. And so when the Big Ten comes back, the sort of narrative around it is going to be, yeah, but the Pac-12 can't. Yeah, but these are the reasons why the Pac-12 isn't going to follow the Big Ten here. And so I'm sort of writing that article, and then I'm sort of looking at the timeline, looking at the dates. Well, okay, how late can the Pac-12 start before they sort of put themselves out of the picture for the reason everyone is playing this fall, which is to be part of the college football playoff? And the college football playoff, the selection for that is going to take place on December 20th. So you're sort of, you have a limited number of weeks to work with. And what ends up sort of getting looked at is Heather Dinich is reporting earlier that they're targeting a mid-November start. And I was looking at the mid-November start going like, yeah, nah, that's not going to do it. Yeah. You're basically just going to play a season for playing a season's sake. Not seriously. You're basically playing exhibition games because by that time you're too late to get in line with the rest of college football. And by that time you've hurt your brand so much that you might as well play in the spring with the Mountain West. But there was this possibility that if the testing stuff came through and they were able to get the approval from the local officials, well, what's the timeline there? And I had sort of calculated, well, if they start practicing on September 28th, sort of a Monday, 2 weeks from now, then, and they were willing to contract their 6 week ramp up a little bit.
When you told me this timeline of yours, I'm like, what?
It's not going to happen, right?
What are you talking about?
Well, yeah, because the timeline was kind of dumb. Like, I was like, okay, if they start practicing on September 28th, then they can get like 5 weeks of practice in. And it's not quite the 6 weeks they want, but it's still enough.
You know, this is me like, well, Mom, if I can take out the trash once a week and bring it in another once a week, and if I clean my room 4 times, and if I do this, will you buy the new PlayStation 5 for me? Like,
yeah.
That's like that level,
bargaining, right? to a large degree.
100%.
But I figured it out, and I figured out it was doable. It was doable to do an 8-game conference schedule, and then I have a 9th game that was a Pac-12 championship game. But it felt very, very far out of reach. Like, I published this article on randotroy.com on Wednesday morning thinking, this is dumb. This is never going to happen. I'm going to publish it because this is as close as I can get to USC and the Pac-12 being involved in the college football playoff. But it's never going to happen. USC is going to come back in mid-November, whatever. It's just going to be a thing. And then all this stuff happens. And then Heather Dinich comes out. And then John Wilner starts talking about how, like, the Halloween start is looking more and more likely. Now, still, personally, I think that if the Pac-12 doesn't start by October 24th, they literally have zero chance of getting into the college football playoff. Do they have a very good chance of getting into the college football playoff even if they were to start this week? No, not really, because I don't think Oregon or USC are really at the level of the Bamas and Clemsons and Ohio States and Oklahomas of the world.
Pessimistic Alicia is out in full force.
and all that. But like, if one of those teams were able to go undefeated and put themselves in the conversation, I am convinced that they have to have played at least 8 games to be able to stand next to those other teams and have a shot of getting into the college football playoff. I still don't know that that's possible at this point, unless the college football playoff is willing to.
Why 8 games?
Because then you can say you're doing an 8-game conference schedule, which is what the SEC does every year.
I hear you. I get your logic behind it.
The other thing, too, is
this is also 2020. We don't even know if the SEC is going to play 6 games.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, is nobody knows anything at this point. But
like the other thing is, like, the virus could kick up in November and nobody gets through any. Like, I don't know.
Well, but at that point,
there's no number of games that I think is.
How funny would it be if the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, their testing is so good that they are able to make it clean through their 8 weeks or 9 weeks, whatever it is. And then, like, by mid-October, the SEC has had to cancel, you know, each team has had to cancel 3 games because madness. And right. I don't think that'll happen, but, like, I think it would be very funny if that were the case. And all of a sudden you've got a 9-win Ohio State and a 9-win USC, and you've got like Bama and the SEC with only 6 wins, and you're like, well, what do you want now?
But this is I can't stand every offseason people go, well, what is it gonna take to get a Pac-12 team in the college football playoff? Do they have to go 12-0? Like, no one knows. The college football season is different every year. Sometimes you got to go undefeated. Sometimes you can be a 1-loss team. Heck, in 2007, you can be a 2-loss team and still win a national title.
My pushback on this is you can't be a 2-loss team in the Pac-12.
You're missing,
you can never be a 2-loss team in the Pac-12.
You're missing the point here. The point here is, like, people have this argument as if there's one specific answer that is true in all cases.
Okay, yeah, but
and that's absolute, like, garbage.
But I'm not saying, like, absolutely it comes down to.
I know.
What I'm saying is that the most likely scenario is that if a Pac-12 team gets into the college football playoff, the most likely scenario is that they will have done so by being undefeated.
But
And anything less, they're the last ones on the totem pole.
But an undefeated, impressive Oregon at 7-0 is not nearly as impressive as a team that's 8-0.
I think a 7-0 Oregon doesn't get in over an 8-1 Bama.
But an 8-0 Oregon does. It's an arbitrary number.
No, I think an 8-0 Oregon also has a big problem with an 8-1 Bama. That's what I'm saying. The hopes were slim to begin with.
Sure, but I just like these. I understand what you're saying here. I'm just saying that.
Okay, here's my other. Okay,
2020 is completely.
Is this a different? Try this on for size.
All right.
If the Pac-12 wants to crown a legitimate champion, how many games do you think they need to play?
5.
I disagree. Okay. I think you have to play 5 in your division and then win the conference title game.
Yeah, that's 5. That's 5 plus 1.
Well, correct. That's 6. You have to win 6 games.
Yeah, but it's a 5-game schedule. Right.
With a conference title game. Yeah.
Yeah. You play everyone in your division and then you win the conference. Because
if you're the Pac-12, is that the way you do it? Or is that a danger? Because don't you want SC and Oregon to play? I guess if you know they're going to get into the title game
to play in the title game.
Yeah. Well, because this was the plan that I was proposing for the spring, wasn't it? Like, right. Do your 5 division games and then do the big, you know what the Big Ten is doing? Exactly what I said the Pac-12 should do in the spring. They're doing their conference title game. And on that same weekend, they're having 2v2, 3v3, 4v4, 5v5, 6v6 from their division so that they all play another game as well.
It's a good idea. I think the interesting thing is, you look at the schedule and what it could be. I think you have to have the most games possible, whatever number that is. That's what you do. It's what you go for. The interesting thing is we saw that schedule before. They put out the 10-game schedule, and there was a couple of bye weeks. There was the plan that if things needed to be rescheduled, they could do that and all that stuff. I'm guessing they're going to want to do something along those lines again.
I disagree. Not that I disagree, but I think it's a different parameter here if the testing is as good as they say it is, and according to the John Wilner article, it is very good to the point
So here's the thing. The testing is going to help prevent spreading. The testing is not going to help prevent catching. You know?
I mean, this is true, but also,
no matter what the test is, it's not going to stop a kid from going home for the weekend and getting the thing.
Okay, I agree, but, and this is the big, big but that's going to get me into trouble, the Pac-12 has been working out this whole time, and they haven't had any major outbreaks.
SC has. SC had to stop practicing.
It wasn't a major outbreak, though.
I mean, compared to what we've seen at other schools, sure. But it was something. And hopefully this testing, makes it to where you don't have to do the contact tracing and have your numbers bigger. And because what happens and what we've seen across the country is, we saw it at Memphis, right? That Memphis had to cancel a game. There was a party bus situation. Then everyone that was on the party bus has to quarantine. The hope with this kind of antigen testing is that they can find out when people are contagious, and you can get the rapid testing to be able to know when they have it, when they're contagious, when not, all those different things, and you're able
to limit the
spread of it. But it doesn't prevent you from getting it. It prevents you from spreading it with the knowledge that you would have.
Right, but you're not going to have spread from within your team. So if somebody gets it, they'll have gotten it as an individual as opposed to like a teammate giving it to another teammate.
Right.
So like that's how you're going to limit to the point where then you don't have to have any games
unless
that are canceled.
They give it to a teammate the before they get the test.
Well,
then,
so maybe you have, one or two if you have
it. But it's
going to
limit the spread. It's not going to prevent.
Right, but like we've seen the Big Ten's plan right now is if you have, it's like a threshold of 5 players at a time that need to get taken out in order for a game to get canceled. Well, I think they're pretty confident that they're not going to have They're not doing a bye week. They're not doing any flexibility because there is no time for that.
Well, that's the other thing. So, and like I said, I think you put in the most games that you possibly can. Whatever that number is. If it ends up being six, it's six. If it's five, it's five. At this point, it's something, right? That's just what you go for. So, anyways, we're going to take a quick break, come back and talk about college football coming back, Pac-12 coming back. College football in general has been back for a couple of weeks now. But we're going to talk about more here on Retro Radio. We'll be right back. All right, Alicia, but before we get into, we got a voicemail from Scott in Memphis. Before we get to that, I want to talk about how you feel about the conference coming back, how football coming back. Are you ready? You know, we've talked about this before that we want college football more than anything because this is what we live for. This is what, this, you guys listening to this, you love college football. We all love college football. This is what we dream of, right? Just hearing the College Game Day theme gives me like insane nostalgia. Everything about college football is why we do this, right? Like we love the sport. That's what we want to see more than anything. At the same time, this is a global pandemic that is. Made this tough because we've talked about it before. The players having access to these tests and not necessarily the local grocery store is a little one of those things that you just have to kind of accept. But should we be accepting that as a society kind of thing? And how do you feel at this point? Because you've been pretty adamant about. Saying that college football shouldn't be the most important thing right now compared to other things, which I certainly agree with. It doesn't mean that we're against college football playing. It means we're against the idea of college football being number one over literally everything else in life, given how crazy 2020 has been.
Well, and that's the difficulty I'm having here is I am extremely excited about USC football coming back. Like I am, Wednesday has been an absolute whirlwind and my overriding emotion has been excitement. Like I can look forward to the next month and think, man, we're going to ramp up to football. Football's going to be back. It's going to be great. I'm stoked. I'm just like, I'm giddy with excitement. At the same time, I have this like dirty feeling because you're right. Like college football shouldn't be taking up the resources that it's taking up. Like Gavin Newsom and his staff in California, Kate Brown and her staff in Oregon shouldn't have had to spend any time on dealing with this rather insignificant element of life.
When
their states are on fire.
During a global pandemic.
During a global pandemic, yeah.
Right.
I saw a tweet thread that was really sobering about like meat packers in Ohio who like don't have adequate testing or PPE or any of that kind of stuff. And a lot of meat packers have died. There have been major outbreaks at a lot of those facilities. And this goes back to like my thing about so like we're putting all these resources into testing football players. Maybe this isn't the thing. This isn't it. This isn't the thing. But I like at the same time, we put a lot of resources into football players that, you know, a lot of people complain about all the money that gets spent on football players as opposed to regular students. So like I get it. I get it. This is something that people do care about and that people do want to make sure comes back. My bigger concern right now is just with the narrative that's going on around college football. Like the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are a joke that are following behind the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12,
right?
Because they waited this long and they got their antigen testing in place and they, you know, allowed caution to rule them initially. And acting, there's a lot of people who are acting like, see, look at how great the SEC did. They're about to play and they weren't, you know, pussyfooting around anything or whatever. And I just looked at it and go like, maybe the SEC isn't the one we should be praising at the moment when Ed Orgeron is talking about how his entire team had COVID. Like, from day one, my concern has been about community spread and limiting the wider societal impact of this virus. I can tell you for certain that 70 some odd football players getting the virus and then interacting with the people in their lives, strangers and family members and all sorts alike, they absolutely contributed to community spread. 1,000%. I don't know what the numbers would be, but I guarantee you some of those players passed that virus on to some other people, and some other people passed that virus on to some other people, and some other people, and some other people, and this is how you end up with a pandemic. So, like, the SEC can beat their chests all they want. The Big 12 can beat their chests all they want because they made it through 2 weeks of college football. But, like, it's not a good thing
that
Texas Tech had 75 players test positive.
Yeah, I find it really gross, the idea of, well, we've had it. We've got the herd immunity all, like, yeah, but it's not that simple. Like, it's like.
Your herd immunity comes at what cost? Comes at the cost of,
first of all,
more people in your community getting it?
We don't even know that herd immunity even exists. Well,
yeah, because
this.
We don't know if you are immune.
People have gotten it twice before.
Yeah.
And so, and then secondly, you talk about the effects that go beyond just death, right? You know, the
long-term heart and lung concerns.
Yeah, like, it's not... I can't even put it into words, right? Like,
I'm just frustrated because, again, I keep going back to, and I see people all the time talking about how the spring football idea was never going to work or all the, I still don't know why it couldn't have worked. Like, I don't know.
Because tradition.
Because tradition.
People,
like,
don't want something that isn't normal.
Yeah. And I get that, but. This victory lap that we're seeing from the other conferences as though they were in the right, which has hardly been proven.
Like you said, if the SEC, has their season crash and burn, and the Big 12, I mean, the Big 10 and the Pac-12 can use this new testing to prevent that sort of thing, then it would give credence the other way. And this is why...
But that's the problem. I don't want the SEC season to crash and burn because that would mean bad things.
For sure.
Yeah. Like, so it's very frustrating for me knowing that I still believe that the Pac-12 was in the right here. I still believe that the Big Ten was in the right here. But, like, the victory lapping that's going on is it's kind of disgusting. Like, it's flies in the face of everything that a society should do to try and stop the spread of a pandemic.
Right.
And we're celebrating it.
Yeah, and that's why, like, I don't feel completely, like, I feel there's mixed feelings here, right? That I don't know that this is ultimately the right thing to do, given that the players can't be in a bubble, we can't protect everything and whatnot. At the same point, I think the advancements in testing are exactly what you want to see. I think that if you're going to come back, it's going to be because you made a situation safer than it could have been. And it's going to be safer because the testing will allow them more intel, more knowledge on how to prevent things from spreading, which is good. And that's what you should be able to do. If you're going to come back, it should be because of that, not because Ryan Day is mad that he just might not be able to win a national championship this year. Like, that's not the reason to come back.
Yeah.
Testing is the reason to come back. And so I feel like the Pac-12, as wild as they, and this is the other thing. I saw tweets about how I saw people putting the Big Ten over the Pac-12 just because the last 24 hours, like the Pac-12 didn't have their crap together. Like, are you kidding me? The Pac-12 had their crap together for the last 6 weeks as everyone commented about how, like, horrific the PR situation was for the Big Ten because nobody was on the same page. You had university presidents putting the health of their universities before everything else. You had coaches wanting to coach football and players wanting to play, as they should. Obviously, that's how it works. And you have nobody agreeing. You have Nebraska... using the Nugs guy, the boneless Nugs dude, as a PR stunt over freaking COVID. Like, you have all this insane things happening in the Big Ten, and just because the Pac-12 has one wild day in which things are happening every 23 minutes, like we talked about in that timeline, and not everyone's on the same page because it's all happening that one day. Well, that's the reason the Pac-12 has egg on their face?
And the egg on the face of the Pac-12 had a lot, like, to me, it was egg on the face of the California governor for misrepresenting this sort of the facts of the situation. Like, I don't know.
And even then,
like I said,
a governor that is dealing with more important things at the same time. Like, this is all stupid to me. Like, I think if you're a Pac-12 fan, I think there's plenty of reasons to feel confident in your conference right now because they did the right thing here, which is and I think this is the thing that needs to be said more than anything else. That we can say that about the Pac-12 is insane.
Yeah.
Like, this is not the conference.
Michael,
that
knock on wood right now, though, because you know you are jinxing crap out of this. Sure. Like, the Pac-12 is going to mess some stuff up.
For sure. Like, I'm not carrying the water of the conference here because this is a conference that hasn't deserved its water to be carried.
It has no trust earned.
No.
Like,
but like, and that's what makes them, you know, handling this whole situation in general, better than the Big Ten, so mind-boggling, right? Because we think of the Big Ten as always having their crap together, and they didn't.
They no longer have the commissioner who had the crap together,
right? And
it was a free-for-all.
And not that I think that this was all Larry Scott's doing. I think it was mostly that this is the Pac-12 being able to be so cohesive.
Am I getting out on a limb that, like? And I have nothing to back this up. This is just my perception. Is it possible that USC now has some better leadership and thus was able to take
initiative?
Is my desire to credit Mike Bone here crazy? I think it might be slightly crazy, but
I don't think we know enough.
It feels like the only thing that changed was this time around USC had some people who know what they're doing.
We know that SC was the school pushing the issue, right? When push came to shove, and they did so in a smart way. We know that for sure. But is that to say that's strictly, you know, Mike Bone? Maybe not. Either way,
I'm jumping the gun there. I just had to get it out there.
Either way, I think that, you know, this isn't me praising Larry Scott. I think more than anything, and I've said this before, that, okay, here's the analogy. Here's the analogy. Yeah, I talk about before that the quarterback didn't matter for SC last year,
mm-hmm.
Which was proved mostly wrong, by the way. But I don't think that the Pac-12 commissioner matters because of the university presidents and the university CEOs and all that kind of stuff, right? And the way that the conference carries itself from a university perspective is stronger than anything a commissioner could do. And so I don't think that I think Larry Scott has had a bunch of missteps. But, like, do I think that things would be drastically different if there was another commissioner in here? No. I mean, at the end of the day, Larry Scott keeps getting raises. It's not his fault that he's accepting raises. We all would accept raises.
Well,
who are the people accepting, giving him the raises?
Well, exactly. Know? The people giving him the raises are the Pac-12 presidents.
Right.
Who have had their heads stuck up their own butts for too long.
But for once, they seem
very united here.
I think they're, but I'm saying they're united more often than not. It just might not be in a path that people agree with.
Well, what I'll say about Larry Scott here is
because they value themselves as being a conference that is on par with the Ivy League,
right? But that's besides the point that I want to make. The point I want to make is let's not get ahead of ourselves praising the Pac-12 too strongly here, because literally all it took was the Pac-12 making a decision and sticking with it. Like, We're meeting bare minimum levels of for sure. competency.
For sure.
The fact that the Pac-12, part of the reason the Pac-12 looked so competent was because the Big 12, the Big 10 looked so incompetent. So like
100%.
I don't think that this is some grand moment by Larry Scott bringing everybody together. I think it's just like
the and I'm conference. Not saying it is.
I'm not saying you were. I'm just saying that like this is what should always be happening in a conference. Right. And regardless of what it is that we're talking about, you should always just present a united front. Like, that's the minimum thing you need to do.
Right, but we get into the issue here where, and I think that, you know, SC has this on their hands with Bone and Kara Folt and whatnot, where anything that's different than the last regime, and it gets...
Also, can we... Hold on. It's
praise or criticism based on that, when rather than just being... criticized or praised for what it is in its own little bubble?
Yeah. Can we just put to bed some really, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't even bring this up, but the vitriol that gets leveled at Kara Folt is really disgusting to me at
times.
The
misogynistic vitriol?
All of it, but particularly the misogynistic vitriol that gets lobbed at Kara Folt.
Yep.
If Kara Folt didn't want USC football to play, if Mike Bone was actively seeking USC not to play, if Clay Helton was actively seeking USC not to play, they wouldn't have partnered up with UCLA on Wednesday night to get the approval from the county, from LA County, as quickly as they did. Like, stop it with these stupid conspiracy theories that USC's leadership is trying to, you know, destroy the football program and all that crap. That's clearly not the case. Can we just put that to bed?
Well, like I said before, you know what the board of trustees and the university loves more than anything? Money.
Yeah.
Money. And
where do they get the money from?
From football.
Yes.
Yeah. And I understand that, like, you know.
I guarantee you Kara Folt would love to make sure all of those new luxury suites at the Coliseum are sold every single year.
For sure. Obviously. Anyone would in that situation. And if she didn't, she probably wouldn't have gone to a school like USC, right?
Yeah.
Anyways.
Sorry, that's an aside. Just had to get that out there. Cause...
All right. Let's go to a voicemail we got from Scott in Memphis.
You've got mail.
Hey, Michael and Alicia, this is Scott from Memphis. You know, I left you a voicemail about 2 or 3 weeks ago about the Big Ten and them reinstating their season so they can get into the college football playoff situation. And, of course, you knew, of course, I was right at the time. And they finally released today, it's Wednesday on the 16th, that they're going to start their season on the 23rd, 24th, which means basically, as you already know, they're just going to shove in 8 games plus a championship just so they can try to get Ohio State or some weird reason, some other team to get into the college football playoff. Where does that leave the Pac-12? Basically, as you can already imagine, and y'all need to be talking about this on a podcast. I'm sure you're about to go in the studio and do it either today or tomorrow. If the Pac-12 doesn't follow suit and do the same, shove in 8 games by the 23rd. It's not because anybody thinks that a Pac-12 team's going to get into the playoff. Probably not much chance. Maybe Oregon. I don't know. But the season becomes pointless, as you can, I'm sure, agree. If you don't play, if you play by yourself, which you would do anyway, it'd be in conference, but there's nothing to play for. So the season becomes lost, in my opinion. And I'm sure I would love to hear y'all discuss it, but it's sad. The whole thing should never – August 11 should not have happened. Everybody should have been calm and sort of discussed it. And I don't understand the rush, because canceling the season on August 11th, now you see that was an utter disaster. And I think it's Larry Scott, the Pac-12 commissioner. Larry, the Big Ten is not your friend. Everybody is looking out for themselves. So I don't know why the Pac-12 thought that, oh, the Big Ten's going to cover it. They're going to – no. So anyway, I love to hear it, because this is going to be a massively developing story. But the Pac-12 probably needs to announce in the next week that they're going to be on the 23rd, 24th as well, because on for October, because if not, be very interesting to see the impact of it. Guys, I hope y'all are well and safe and healthy, and I look forward to hearing y'all. Bye.
Thanks for the call, Scott. I feel like I stole some of your thunder a little bit earlier talking about my my scheduling plan. I swear I hadn't heard your voicemail. I tend not to hear the voicemails until Michael plays them as we're recording. So I swear I didn't steal your idea, but you now know that we are on the same page. I believe that if the Pac-12 is going to make a rush to get back to play games this fall, the only reason to do so is to get on a timeline that lets them at least be in the conversation around the college football playoff, even if
playoffs. Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me?
Even if we all agree that the Pac-12 isn't putting a team in the college football playoff, I think the Pac-12 needs to be able to be ranked in the college football playoff rankings. The Pac-12 needs to be one of the Power 5 teams that are being considered in those rankings by the selection committee, just for the perception of the conference and all of that.
You can put it easier. They need to be eligible for a New Year's Six Bowl.
Yes, they need to be eligible.
Because that's a big paycheck.
Yes, well, yes, assuming that the New Year's Six Bowls happen. But either way, they need to be on the... If the rest of the Power Five is playing, then they need to be... They can't be out alone on an island. They need to get out there and play. And like I agree with here with Scott, if you start too late, then you are still out on an island. You're just out on an island while you're playing in November. Like the point of it sort of ceases to exist. Like I said, you might as well just play in the spring with Mountain West or with the FCS or whatever it is. The one area that I'll say there is still something to play for, because you can still win the Pac-12 title. Like, yeah, if you're USC, that still matters, but
national title or bust.
Yeah. But in terms of perception, I think he's right on that. It's right. Not national title or bust, but like you have to at least be on the timeline. But right. That doesn't mean that winning the Pac-12 wouldn't be irrelevant, because quite frankly, even if you got on the timeline, even if you were able to figure out a way to start on October 24th, you're probably still not going to end up with someone in the playoff. So all there is literally still there is who wins the Pac-12. So like that still has to count for something, but the narratives and the perception and all of that will be something that if I'm the Pac-12, I don't want to fall into a situation where I'm not part of that conversation with the Power Five, where I'm just sort of like floating out on my own. The only other thing I'll say for in response to Scott's call, which was excellent, and hope you're also doing well and you and your family and everybody. But I get what he's saying about August 11th. I know he knows where we stand on that. But I guess my thing with that is, even if the Pac-12 hadn't announced a cancellation, they're still not playing this weekend. Like, they're still not playing next weekend or 3 weeks from now. So I don't know that it actually changes a lot for where the Pac-12 is or isn't.
I think the biggest thing is they had to have something to show for it, right? And this is why I didn't like the whole conversation that was being had a couple weeks ago. And I talked about this that on the last episode, the question of, well, did the Pac-12 and the Big Ten act too soon? And I talked about it then, like, we don't know if they acted too soon, because we don't know what the results of it is. If the Pac-12 has something to show for it, and here we are, and they have new testing, if that's what they have to show for it, then that's something to show for it, right? Then it justifies being in the situation. Now, I think you could make the argument that they could have gotten that testing without the pause, but also, even if they wouldn't have paused, we're talking about, what, a couple of weeks? That's really the only difference, because the original schedule was going to start, what, September 26th, and they had already talked about how SC and UCLA were probably not going to play the first two games, right?
Yeah.
And so you put that back, we're talking about 2 weeks. Well, potentially two weeks that was... You trade 2 weeks for being able to get the test, and I think you do that.
Well, and that's the thing.
In hindsight, not that you knew that going in.
Would it have been better to go through the entirety of August and most of September every single week saying, yeah, USC still can't practice. Yeah, USC still can't practice. Yep, USC still can't practice.
I think the inaction would have looked worse.
Yeah. Now, the thing I will consider and concede is that maybe if every week they had had to deal with the announcement of, well, we got to push back practice again, we got to put, maybe they would have been more proactive in, right. Hey, California, can we have a chat right now? Yeah. But then again, they would have had to cancel practice for a week anyways because of the fires. So
yeah, like you know, I said before,
it's complex.
I would have been fine with them, you know, holding off because they still had time to hold off anyways.
Yeah, I think that is a given. They had time.
But
I don't think
that we, especially knowing what we know now, I think we can definitively say it wasn't the wrong decision.
Now, here's what I want to know. What if in an alternate universe where the Pac-12 had been more concerned with what the Big 12 did or the ACC did than the Big 10. What if the Pac-12 had waited a week and said, whenever the Big 10 makes their decision, we're going to go the next week. And if they had made it through those 7 days, would they have been on a different path where they would have said, you know what, the ACC and the Big 12 are not pushing, are not gonna cancel here. Let's just bide our time here and wait. And how would the perception change? But like I said, then you're just going to have to deal with the Pac-12 canceling games every week for three weeks.
And when do they get the testing? Did them shutting things down?
Did they know that
allow them to get the testing quicker? I don't know. I don't know that. I don't know if anyone has that answer. But either way, I think when you look at it, they shut things down. They got the testing. They're coming back. Or presumed to come back here. We're jumping the gun a little bit. And I think that's fine. This is going to be a situation where, yeah, you're not going to have the 10-game schedule that you wanted. That's a bummer. I think the other thing is, and this sucks, that you have to go on the timeline of everybody else, because I would totally be fine with the Pac-12 saying, you know what, we're going to have a 10-game schedule. We're still going to play the 10 games. And then make the
play
appeal.
Play into January?
Play into January or something. Like, make the appeal to the college football playoff to change their schedule.
Not that they're going to listen.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it would be one of those situations where, again, what is stopping those bowl games from, you know, taking place there? Like, Even the SEC, their conference championship game is 2 weeks before New Year's Day.
Yeah.
So even they would benefit by those games being delayed.
Oh,
the only reason, again, goes back to
tradition.
Yeah. Like, people don't want things to not be normal.
Yeah. But they absolutely should.
But it's 2020 and nothing's normal anyway.
Yeah. You need to accept this fact.
Right.
The SEC is starting on September 26th. Like,
the NHL right now, and the NBA is going to get there, but the NHL, they're going into the Stanley Cup Finals, right? The Stanley Cup Finals will be concluding a season that will have began more than a year ago.
Yeah.
When you include, like, the preseason.
Yeah, no, it's an unusual time, and the pact and the playoffs should accommodate that. And I wonder if it's almost too late, because the Big Ten, I think, could have pushed the issue. I think the Big Ten could have said, hey, we want to have a bye week in here, so you're going to need to move that stuff down a week because you want Ohio State in your playoff, don't you? The Pac-12 doesn't have that right. same leverage, but, you know, maybe if the college football playoff is so concerned with keeping the sort of Power Five situation going, maybe they'd push back a week, but
I'm not saying that they were listening to the Pac-12. Mostly, like, I think that we shouldn't just.
I would prefer and this isn't going to happen, but like, I would prefer, like you said, Pac-12 just play 10 games, play into January, then you get all those January Saturdays to yourself. Prime time.
Can you imagine the people roasting Larry Scott over having a season in which there was no opportunity to go to, like, in a season like that? Because I agree that, like, it would be interesting to just play your own thing just for the hell of it, but, like, The it would be a PR disaster for the Pac-12 to do that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. 100%. That's why I said they're absolutely not going to do it, but it would be fun if they were willing to.
Yeah. Last thing to get to before we wrap this thing up. We did get a text message from the analyst. This comes like a week and a half ago. It's a super long text message. We're not ignoring it. Just things have definitely changed in what's going on with college football. And it was a link to a New York Times article about coronavirus testing. It started, the text from the analyst starts with, given that both of you have expressed dismay about people who want to see college football this season, to which I think both of us have the rebuttal of, we want to see college football this season.
Yeah, I think that's a misread of how we feel.
Just because you know we're taking COVID-19 seriously and putting the health of we think that the health of their players and their families and everyone on campus is paramount. That doesn't mean that we don't want to see college. We want to see college football. We want to see college football done safely.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
They're not mutually exclusive ideas.
They shouldn't be. And like, just to be fair here, I am supremely uncomfortable with the idea of CTE and underlying thing that's happening in football. And yet I continue to watch it every year and I continue to cover it. So I've sat here and said that I really wish they'd move to soft helmets or take pains to try and, you know, do the panel helmets, all those kinds of things.
I don't like the band doing the counter march and I still watch the band.
Then that is one of your worst takes. But yes, this is true. You can feel uncomfortable with something. You can disagree with the way that it's done. I disagree with a lot of the things that are done in college football, but that doesn't mean that I'm anti-college football. I just would like college football to work out as safely as possible and as best as possible for all involved.
And I think this goes without saying that for the health of the podcast, for the health of our livelihood, everything is better if college football exists. So why wouldn't we want college football to exist? So,
like I said, I am extremely, extraordinarily excited for the prospect of Halloween Pac-12 football.
Oh, you know what's great about the games on Halloween?
You won't have to deal with Halloween.
Hell yes, because screw Halloween. It's a stupid holiday. It is the worst.
It's the best. It's my favorite holiday, and you are the worst.
It is the worst. It's the absolute worst. Dia de los Muertos sucks too.
I don't celebrate Dia de los Muertos.
I don't. So. I find the skeleton drawings.
My family
very
always
creepy.
Went and got donuts on All Souls Day, which I think is Dia de los Muertos.
You and your family's you have a tradition
have
for
a tradition
every.
For
how do you keep
everything.
Up with all these traditions?
I don't know. Hey, the tradition where you get donuts is not a bad tradition.
I'm not saying it is. I think it's kind of cool. I think that your family is like the Big Ten. There's like
leaders and legends.
No, I'm saying like. Wait, hold on. Michigan and Indiana have
a
trophy?
A rivalry?
Why do they have a trophy?
Why? Yeah.
Wait, Michigan and Minnesota are playing for the little brown jug? Like, why? Because it's tradition. Okay, cool. All right.
True story.
I'm not hating. I'm just saying. Anyways, that's going to wrap up the pod. Football is back, coming back, which means... Now's the time to go over to good old Patreon, patreon.com/reignoftroy, where you can get all of our bonus content, including an episode we are going to record later today, Thursday, the day that you're probably listening to this, with our pal Jake Merrifield from the What's Bruin Show. We'll talk about his reactions to college football coming back. We're also going to record another Only Skinect, our nerdy, 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 difficult USC game show. And then, you know, college football coming back means... means we're going to actually do the position previews. Because there might not be a college football season, but we'll sure act like there is.
You got to change that.
No, it's a thing of the past now.
It is a thing of the past, yeah.
And by the way, Keely still has not listened to it.
She hates us, Michael. We know how she feels about us.
Still,
it's fine.
If you guys are still listening at this point, go tweet at Keely is my name. Why do you refuse to listen to Reign of Troy Radio? Go tweet her this.
You should absolutely do this. Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Tell her. Actually, tweet verbatim. Watch Less Angels. Listen to more rock.
There you go. Watch Less Angels. Listen to more rock. It'll make you happier.
It would. It would improve her self-esteem. Yeah. Not self-esteem. Her mood.
Her mood. Yes, her absolutely. Mood.
Her self-esteem is probably great.
She'd be a happier human. Well, she has tons of reasons to be high on self-esteem. She's awesome.
Yeah.
But her mental health, her happiness would be greatly improved if she listened to us as opposed to watch the angels.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for listening, as always. Again, bonus episodes, patreon.com/reignoftroy is where you can get all of those for as little as $5.55 a month, all of our bonus content. If you want to listen to our main shows ad-free, you can do that for $3.33. But hey, just for $2.22 more cents at $5.55, you get the bonus content and the main shows for ad-free episodes. $10, you get to join our Slack channel, talk to us, and talk to about us as much football as you want, especially since it's, again, likely coming back. Even though our luck, really, let's be honest. We put up this episode on Thursday morning, and then it comes out Thursday that...
just kidding.
Yeah, there's no football.
Yeah.
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 Anyways, at that point, then we just go back to trying to buy a PlayStation 5 on pre-order.
that becomes our full-time job, just trying to buy a PlayStation 5.
Yeah.
Right. If anyone knows how to get one, hit us up.
Hook us up. If you're listening... If you have an uncle who works for Sony over in Japan, you know, hook us up.
Mm-hmm. We wouldn't say no. Mm-hmm.
All right. Until then, we're going to catch you until next week. See ya.
See ya.
Even sooner on Patreon. Patreon.com/reignoftroy. See ya.